This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora, hello and welcome to Backchat with James King on Free FM. This is your weekly discussion show talking about local, national and international issues. If you'd like to be part of the program, just email me, jamesking2020@gmail.com. That's jamesking2020@gmail.com. I'd love to have your comments, your questions, your queries, your criticisms and, of course, your observations. On the show today, we explore the invaluable relationship between mentors and mentees with our resident expert in health, Dr. Alexander Stevens II, his mentees, Irie Thomas and Sione Whanau. Mentorship provides guidance, support and knowledge transfer, empowering individuals to navigate challenges, seize opportunities, whether in the workplace, educational, community settings. These partnerships foster resilience, inspiration, and build networks that last a lifetime. So it only remains for me to say a very good morning and malolole to all of you.
Malolole. In kia ora.
Let me just pull you up there. So, gentlemen, Irie Thomas, Sione Whanau, and Dr. Alexander Stevens II, why are we here?
Well, this is a kind of third series, I suppose, of looking at tracking the effectiveness of having mentees and actually understanding, well, where have they been a year ago? So we did an interview a year ago, and then we did it 6 months ago, and I thought actually it would be nice to kind of have maybe one more...
Kōrero
about the importance of actually having mentorships, especially now when young people are being impacted on so many different levels. And I just thought a great little segment to be able to catch up.
Yeah.
So,
by way of introduction, perhaps people haven't listened to the other broadcast we had with Sione and Irie. Sione, tell us a little bit about your background. You're Tongan?
Yes. So I've been practicing my Tongan speaking. Malolele, malotalawa, koko hinga ko Sione alawa pai whino, ko hau mei mauwhanga mō pea I Tonga. Moi hau mei manu rewa i Aotearoa. Uko honga ia mō fie fie lahi au pito ke o lawa o Lea Whakatonga I he Leti Ōpea kamatai uke Lea Whakatonga I he Lea Whakatonga. Malo pito I ho o mau whanonga mai pea kataki o fie fie he tohinga e tala noeni. It's in English, pretty much greetings. I come from the villages of Mauwhanga and Pea in Tonga, and from the humble home of Manurewa in Auckland. Pretty grateful I get to speak the Tonga language for the week of Tonga Language Week, and grateful I get to speak it on radio.
And I'm very glad to have you do it too.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's it from me.
Irie, introduce yourself, please.
Kia ora whānau, pukeha pai te maunga, manga tai ora te awa, ko kono ti te whenua, te pātū te marae, ko te pātū te iwi, muri whenua te iwi, ngā puhinui tonuwe ngā iwi. Kia ora, I'm Irie, I am from up north, I come from the sixth iwi, the muri whenua, and the almighty ngā puhinui tonuwe.
Kia ora.
Excellent. And Dr. Alexander, I suppose you need no introduction, but
well, it's good to be nice. Back, right? Yeah. Normally it's a monthly gig, so we're back here after the next week. So, kia ora whānau. My name's Dr. Alexander Stevens. I specialise in seven different areas of health and wellness, ranging from mental health, addiction, sexual violence recovery, all the way through to suicide prevention and financial capability. Like Irie, I hail from the exact same area. And no doubt we'll be feeding off each other's wairua in conjunction with Sione's as we continue with our podcast.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about what mentorship is. We talk about mentors and mentees. What's the situation there?
So for over a decade now, I provide mentorship on a whole raft of areas with people whose kaupapa or whose philosophies kind of align with mine. So take these two tāne that are in the room right now. Both of them have an interest in health, specifically Māori and Pacific health. Pai anō, that's great, because actually so do I. Mental health and addictions in particular, that's even better because that's down my alley too.
Yeah.
And what we know in my profession as an addictions clinician is that there are very few Māori and Pacific drug and alcohol clinicians, and young ones in particular. And what we know is that within our particular profession, holding on to young practitioners is incredibly hard,
right,
because the sector of working in mental health and addictions is hard on its own. So we seem to get a bit of an influx of young people, but it's about holding on to them. Young people I define as under 30.
Right.
If you can survive the first 5 years, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But it's about how do you navigate that. So part of my mentorship is ranging from a whole raft of things about looking after ourselves. How can we in good faith look after other people if we're not doing it ourselves?
Yes.
Some of it's around financial capability. So how do we get our own selves financially ahead? Because we know that actually money impacts lots of clients that we work with, and no doubt, you know, these two fine fellows will give examples of their own experiences.
Well, you do pro bono work as well, don't you?
I do. Yeah.
So you're giving back in spades.
Yeah, well, it is true. I mean, I do offer free counselling from the top of Hokianga all the way down to Taupo, to New Plymouth, to Tauranga.
Gosh.
So I average about 4,000 to 5,000 kilometres a month.
Yeah.
And I should say this to my AET colleagues, I do work there Monday to Friday, so I am there. And then it's after hours, you'll find me travelling. Because the reality is that there's so few of us, and by us I mean people that work in sexual violence, and specifically Māori, and, you know, with Pacific worldviews.
I don't think I've ever asked you, why did you get involved in sexual violence?
Because I had my first disclosure from someone that I knew at school when they were 16.
Right.
And I think I was 15. I'd have to double check.
Wow.
But I just remember being so ill prepared for dealing with the disclosure, and then subsequently found out that they took their life a year later. And it really did have a profound impact on me. Now, you know, I come from, on my Māori side, that it's a bit of a fractured lineage, but they came from tohungas, so that's the Māori word for kind of healers. Yes. And on my Pākehā side, are nurses and therapists and counsellors. I can't stand the sight of blood.
No.
But give me thoughts, feelings, and trauma, and we'll navigate quite safely through that.
Right.
And I guess when I was thinking about mentorship, what I realised is a lot of the stuff I actually kind of navigated on my own until I met my own mentor,
yes,
who's now retired, Dr. Helen Warren. And I just thought, actually, what would it be like to support people who want to get in the same kind of thing, but help them as best as possible, kind of traverse what is a complex space?
Yeah, so Yone, what about you? What sort of area are you particularly interested in studying or working in, or... I mean, is it sexual violence like Alexander?
Recovery.
At the moment, quite a broad range of things, because through my studies with my postgrad diploma in mental health and addictions, realised that some of the people impacted need solutions, or have complex needs, therefore complex solutions is needed.
Right.
So it's kind of looking at, like I mentioned in the last one, how diversifying qualification and experience really helps in terms of serving our communities, like those affected by sexual violence. They normally tend to fall into bad habits with drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm,
have not having their trauma sort of dealt with. And I'm also studying a Tonga language course at MIT.
Yep.
So learning a bit about my own language is also helping in providing that sort of solution. Because culture can see
just as a
particular factor.
Just as an aside, it's always interested me that we've not, at school, we're not learning Pacific languages, Tongan included. Mm. You might learn French.
Or German,
but not a regional specific language in our part of the world.
I think now high schools are recognising the importance. There might be Pacific languages in high schools nowadays.
Really? Yep.
I know that my younger brother's doing some sort of Pacific language course in Manurewa High at the moment.
Yes.
But yeah, I think schools are now recognising the importance.
That's a good thing.
So,
can I also just do a quick interjection? So you're doing your postgraduate diploma in mental health and addictions, you're doing your Tongan language, and you're doing one other one. Go on.
The advanced certificate in e-learning with MIT as well. So.
Oh, okay. Because you're almost as greedy as Alexander.
I try.
Irie, what area, what specific areas would you like to work in, or are you working in?
So at the moment I am a support worker for Kahui Tuka. I work in a service that provides support to Māori suffering with mental health disabilities. So what I'm passionate about is Māori health. Māori health science and pretty much anything in the scope of Te Ao Māori.
Yeah.
But I would also like to extend that over to the PI brothers, because if there's anyone as close to us in Aotearoa right now, it's our Pacific brothers. You know, we have similar history, quite close in language, but, you know, we're all just brothers trying to look out for each other and give support. So, yeah, I would reckon I'd be... more passionate about Māori health, but also extending it over to our Pacific brothers as well.
Yes, and would that be in the area of addictions as well, or?
Yeah, it would. So I would want to focus on mental health and addiction, but I would also want to help with trauma. So maybe further down the line, look at maybe doing psychology or something like just something around in that area. So. I know when I have to talk to the higher-ups, I know what to say, but when I talk to my tangata whai ora, I know, you know, to just come down and be human with them.
So what are the key qualities do you believe make an effective mentor?
Having really established networks in the community, there's two key areas. Yeah, having established networks in the community, so... with these particular gents, you know, seeing their potential and thinking to myself, actually, if you want to work in mental health and addictions and you want to support our Māori and Pacific, then how can I find appropriate people that could support you? So in both cases, they've got support worker roles. You know, Sione was just saying how he's also studying, so it's about finding employees that are flexible at the same time, because not with love, not all employees want their staff to be studying at the same time. I think it's foolish. I think if you're going to keep your staff around longer, you should actually be supporting them to study, because it shows that you care.
Absolutely.
Is the first and foremost. And then I guess the other part for me as a mentor is actually trying to improve my own self, because obviously what you say and what you do is important.
Yes.
I don't want to talk one thing and do the other. And ultimately, for me, the mentorship then goes one step further, because it's about growing potential in future generations. You know, the reason that I kind of travel across the country, if we go back to your previous question, is because there's only a handful of men, and by handful, I think there's two of us. That's it.
Across the country?
Across the country, that do what we do.
Why is that? Why is there such a dearth of... men and Pacific and Māori men at that?
Yeah. Well, okay, so there's two things to contemplate. Why is there few practitioners on this side? Because there's very few that work within mental health and addictions, fewer that work in suicide prevention, sexual violence recovery, and then combining all of them.
Yeah.
Well, like Scribe Song, which is my favourite song, not many, if any, right? Yes. So then it's about how do we...
Gosh, he's so hip.
Yeah. I'm so hip. So early 2000s. So that's the first challenge, right? How do we support our whānau and ainga across the country? And the shortage, and this is where I come back to education, James, is I don't think, you know, we're given many options about careers of working in this area. And this is going back in the mid-90s, I remember, what was that Meatworks place? Is it Halabees?
AFCO.
Came in and talked about offering jobs and careers working in the Meatworks, and then we had other people talking about working in Tip Top, which held all bread. And I just remember thinking that my skill sets didn't fit that. And I actually think because I had already had whānau that were working in health, I already knew that there was something beyond essentially factory roles. And as I've often said, James, I have no problems. Work is work. Pūtea, which is the Māori word for money, so pūtea is pūtea. So whatever you need to do to get your kai on the table. But I knew that that wasn't meant for me. So actually, I've gone on a bit of a roundabout to kind of figure out who I am. And then along the way, in terms of meeting these two beautiful gentlemen, I've realised that we have very similar synergies.
Yes.
And part of that's how do we try to get you there, you know, in the least amount of time, but still kind of learning and growing your own potential.
I wanted to ask, if I was someone who was thinking about moving into this sector, what would be my pathway?
This is a great question that Sione asked.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. And I guess for me, it's all contextual. So say, for example, if you have the lived experience of mental health and addictions and you've started to work on yourself, or you've got yourself down the track where you're either abstinence or harm reduction, which is when you're not doing it to hurt yourself, then I think jump on board, because I think your lived experience is invaluable. And in fact, it's often what our clients say. Actually, what's the word that you use? I use clients in my practice, but what do you?
I use tangata whai ora.
So with the tangata whai ora, or either with clients, there's a kind of connection, like you get me, much more than maybe someone who doesn't have the same kind of experience, James.
Yeah.
So I would look at doing something like maybe a graduate diploma in addictions, which is offered online if you're new to university. If you have studied and you want to change professions, then you might want to do something at postgraduate level.
Yes.
But there's also certificates available just to kind of get you thinking about it.
You've got the certificate of mental health.
You do.
And that's a year.
That's a year, and that's if you're talking about the well-being one, is it, or the one where you can then become someone who can practice working with other people with lived experience?
Yeah,
is that
practice,
the one? Yeah. So there's different pathways. The key is, though, is that you really have to have a passion for this area.
Yeah.
And you've really got to have clear structures in place, because you're working with the most vulnerable of the most vulnerable, and sometimes your own stuff can be triggered. It's actually really vital that you've kind of got your stuff sorted out as best as possible.
How do you cultivate a good mentor?
I guess for me it's all about experience and being able to transfer what I've learnt onto the next generation.
Yeah.
One of the things I talk about is the seven generation approach. So I seriously think about what would it look like? How could I get these two guys in place so at some point when I retire, not right now, they might be able to pick up mentees if that's what their vibe is, that's what they want to do, and help transfer some of that knowledge. One of the things that we talked about, and I don't know if it might come up again, was talking about things like, you know, I accrued over $97,000 worth of student debt. One of the things I've been passing on to Sione at the moment is, how do we get you as many scholarships that you're entitled to, not because you're brown, but it's around equity. So we know that there are very few Pacific Islanders in general. Tongans, for example, even more so. So how do I get him ahead financially so that he doesn't have this debt that he then has to pay off and try to make, you know,
a decent
ends meet? I mean, how have you gone with that journey in terms of just that kōrero around scholarships and finding a way forward, Sione, with studies?
Is this like financially?
Yeah, just like that stuff. Capable.
So far it's been good. Especially with the role I have at the moment, working full time helps pay that off. But in terms of paying off my student debt, I realized that hopefully close in the future.
Yeah.
I get to see more of that money I get to earn instead of being taken away.
But, and KiwiSaver was going all right since the last time. I mean, James, one of the things that we spoke about when I worked at the retirement, I wish I had done this, is put 10% of my KiwiSaver away when I had the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, when I was 23, 24, and Sione, without telling us that you're a millionaire, I mean, you led the way by doing 10%, which I, at the time, said I didn't know any 23-year-olds. At that stage.
Yeah, in our previous conversation, I was still at 10%. So I've just come out of 10%. I just reduced to 3%, just with the financial circumstances I have at the moment.
Yeah.
But, so it's been close to a year with that 10% working in my current role. Is actually been more then the 5 years I worked at the airport at 3%.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't tell you anything, mate, is if you're listening to whoever's listening to, jump on that 10%.
Yeah, so it's about practicing what you preach, and then often saying to them, look, if this aligns with your kaupapa or your vision, then let's continue on. Yeah. And if it doesn't, hey, ka pai, mātua.
Yeah. Do you aim to get a doctorate, Sione?
Yes, that's in the to-do list.
On the to-do. What about you, Irie?
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Oh, it's very profound, very philosophical.
Thank you.
So how do you strike a balance between guiding your mentee and allowing them to find their own path?
That's probably my biggest challenge, because sometimes, you know, these two human beings can have all kinds of challenges, and so it's easy to try to be pulled in. But also, mentorship shouldn't be confused with parenthood.
Yes.
Right? It really is about providing... Well, for me, my approach is always about that wah, that time and space. So, you know, much more thoughtful reflections, James, where I don't try to legally bind myself into something that will lead into long-term commitments.
So you're not a teacher as such?
I don't. My approach doesn't tend to be
teachery
because it doesn't work for me. Mine's much more like, we know that there are highs and lows is a good example. And if you've got depression and anxiety and you're getting hit with that moment or that low moment, what can we do in the interim to try to get you ahead?
Mm.
You know, it's when I tend to talk in seasons, for example, so we know that tides come in, tides come out. Your tide is out at the moment. What structures do we need to put in place so that when the tide comes back in, you can actually have the freedom then to kind of hop on board a walker or a boat and start to float back out and seek opportunities?
Was it you who said just before that you've got to lead the way in... Not force people into it, but lead the way by what?
Well, three things. By being genuine. So tikka and pono means genuine and honest with who you are and what you do. You'll find out pretty soon, actually, if you're aligning yourself to someone, who their character is. You know, the character of a person.
Yeah.
Secondly, demonstrating, that you say something, but you also follow it through as well. So, you know, if we take financial capability, for example, I'm definitely a spender.
Yes.
But I also recognize... Thank you, James.
I know you are.
But I also recognize that I only spend when I make sure that everything else is paid off.
Yeah.
Right? So I would never tell them to do something if I wasn't prepared to do it myself. And then the third one is actually trusting that as they're developing... I mean, these two human beings are in sparkling form.
Yes.
James, I mean, you know, Irie before was working as a security guard, part-time hours were all over the place with love, and to see him, you know, getting full-time hours and really working and honing in on his skill sets as a support worker, to me is wonderful, because then he's practicing some of the skills. Sione's the same thing. He's chosen an academic route at this point, and Irie won't be doing that till January, and yet it's for me as a mentor, it's like, okay, well, that's the route that you want to go to. How do I support you doing that? So my other role, obviously, I'm senior Māori lecturer at AUT.
Yes.
And being able to guide Sione down that master's and potentially PhD pathway, so that, as a quick example, we had another mentee called Caleb who recently graduated with mental health and addictions.
Okay. Yeah. He's been on the show before.
He has. And I was up on the... I was the first time I was a staff member on the stage watching the students come through.
Cool.
And one of the biggest things that you can do as an academic is to stand up when you know that particular person and kind of nod your head in acknowledgement. And so to see Caleb come up on the stage with his postgraduate certificate and mental health and addictions, and knowing that he's now, you know, he calls himself a clinician. He's not; he's a practitioner of health. You've got to earn those stripes. But to see him stand up and know that all that hard work, James, the sacrifices that you make, not only as a student but as a mentee to find a way forward, all paid off, and he seems to be doing okay as a practitioner.
Well, we suddenly dropped into comedy hour.
He's chuckling here. Sione loves this because, and I'm going to slightly divert from the conversation, Sione loves this because in my field, you couldn't call yourself a drug and alcohol clinician for at least 5 years. You had to earn your stripes. Whereas now they're dropping it left, right, and centre. And I'm just like, no, no, step back. You are a practitioner. Once you master the art, then you become
a clinician
within the drug and alcohol space. Yes.
So how do you guys strike a balance between being mentored and being a mentee from both sides? How is he any good? Is Alexander any good?
I'll take this one. What's the question again, James? Can you help me one more time?
Firstly, is Alexander any good? And secondly, is there a balance to that guides you?
Oh, is he any good? Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. How would you characterise his style?
So I would say he gives the example and not the instructions. Yes, he gives the example, not the instruction. He gives the instructions later. So it's kind of like, watch me do it, then I'll tell you how I do it, and then you give it a go. And I seem to learn better that way because, you know, I'm a visual learner and I like getting into the mahi, working with my hands. So if I see someone giving me an example and then telling me the step-by-step, then I'm like, oh, so that's why you started here and then you started there and then finished it like this.
Right.
So, yeah, and in regards to the balance, thanks to this man, I've actually more balanced in my life now. As he said, I was insecurity. Mm. Hours were all over the place. There were times where I would sit on my phone using my calculator, calculating the hours, looking at the payee calculator, making sure I had enough to pay my bills and make ends meet. But, thanks to Dr. Alexander, I am now more balanced than I have been. And
you got a car? Figuring out financial capability, James.
Yeah, I've got a car now, so I've saved much more time rather than taking the public transport. But in terms of that balance, I see how he does things, but I also reflect on his personality because he does this, he does what he wants to do.
Mm.
And I'm like, I want to do that as well. But as a mentee, I know that I have to learn from example before I go out and step into my own field. Yes. Although there are times where he had to pull me back in because I'm adventurous and I like to, I want to go do this, I want to go do that. And he's like, no, do this first.
Right.
And then we can move to the fun parts. So, yeah.
Are you, Alexander, are you Gandhi or are you Richard Nixon?
Interesting.
He's Master Oogway.
Oh, I like that. I'd like to think I'm a little bit of Dame Fiona Cooper because we also whakapapa up there too. So I'll walk the distance for my mentee. So if I know that there's something that needs to be up to bat for their character, I'll do it.
Yes.
But I'm also a little bit of whakapapa to Princess Dapoya too because there's a time and place where we need to kind of lay down our arms and apply diplomatic ways forward. And I think sometimes if you've had multiple barriers put in front of you time and time again, how do we find a way of walking this path with a mentee to build, like Irie's a good example of where we set up a plan of trying to get him a car with no loans, purely through savings. So the last time that we were here 6 months ago, that was the dream and the ambition. And slowly but surely, he got his car.
Yeah.
Did you get insurance yet? We're in process of that.
We are in process of that.
Excellent.
We have the money. But we did not set. I didn't call them.
That's okay. I'll set you up there. I'll set you up there too. And so in that example, James, some people might think, well, it's a car, but actually, to me, a car means that he now has options to travel.
Options.
The
yep.
fact that he doesn't have a personal loan, which could be anywhere up to 28% per annum, means that he doesn't have to pay huge amounts of debt off in order to get a.
Okay.
Car, right. And actually, as Wairua would have it, his car got reduced by an extra $800 or something like that, wasn't it? So it was perfect timing.
Yeah.
And to me, I would say with some confidence that I has now learned through this mentorship process around how to get what you want without having to get yourself into huge amounts of debt. Because as you know, we're kind of in the society where it's like, I want it and I want it now. And that's one of the challenges around working with our young people because actually it correlates to a huge amount of debt. So what about you, brother? You were looking at, if you look at it from an academic path, you've gone from 2 degrees to, he's competitive. James, you know how you often mock me for having 30-plus qualifications.
32.
He's well and truly on his way.
Good.
Have you reached double digits yet in the last year, Sione?
Wouldn't say competitive, but inspired would be the best choice of words.
Yes.
I guess in regards to his mentorship, it's a lot more push and pull.
Yeah.
At the right time. And then there's a lot of times it's just hands off and then let
good luck, everybody.
Yeah. In terms of like academia, it sort of helped shape, form certain perspective. And like I mentioned earlier about those complex needs and concerns, like a much more holistic approach, and I kind of understand what it looks like and why it's needed.
Mm.
So in terms of my academic pathway, it's been like a lot more helpful under his guidance.
Yeah. Well, should we take an opportunity to listen to a track?
I think so. Let's go Lost Tribe of Aotearoa. Thank you.
Diary, that's your song.
Yes, it is.
When did you write that?
I didn't. My Jamaican or my Māori or my reggae ancestors did.
Where does the origin of your name come from?
The origin of my name comes from Jamaica. Mm. The meaning for my name is, there's multiple meanings. The main ones I identify with is peace, love and harmony. But it's also the feeling you get when you, you know, partake in the Jamaican goodness, as they say. Feeling
Jamaican
Irish.
Jamaican goodness. Yeah. I've heard it all now. Hey, can you discuss a specific challenge you faced as a mentee and how you overcame it?
One of the challenges as a mentee was believing in my own intelligence. So as growing up as a Māori, I've pretty much learned, spoke, read, read, write, all in te reo Māori. I can do it fluently and quite well. But when it comes to English in academia, it's a challenge for me. It's like climbing up a mountain with a 50 kg pack on your back and there's a little goblin on your shoulder, you know, hitting your head with one of those squeaky hammers.
Yes.
Like squeak, squeak, squeak. And it's kind of like the feeling of, oh, you can't do it, you're not smart enough, da-da-da. But overcoming that was Alex explaining to me that there's more than one form of intelligence. So I've learned that there's not only IQ, but EQ.
Yes.
And apparently I have a lot of EQ, emotional intelligence. So
which they say is really important in the workplace as well as in a personal sense.
Yeah, well, I think due to my EQ, as Alexander says, I get a lot of disclosures as well. You know, people right. feel, you know, comfortable. Yeah, comfortable enough to open up to me, talk to me about things. And I never like to judge anyone on anything because I'm still living, I'm still experiencing, and I'm still learning. So who am I to judge anyone's journey and anyone's shortcomings, challenges, or aspirations?
Yes, and what about you, Sione? What specific challenge have you faced as being a mentee?
One of the challenges I had this year was like Irie being sort of tunneled in into giving this general, like into a specific point of view. And with the guidance of my mentor here, looking at it through different point of views is what sort of helped me keep grounded, keep sort of confident. One of the challenges for me was when I'm being told one thing, it just put me down a bit, not gonna lie. And it just took me time to realize these other perspectives to look at how things are and I guess things moving forward. So keeping things general, hopefully they answered that question.
Yes, moments like these, you need mentees.
Nice one. I get it, and that's all that matters, James.
That's right. People of a certain age get that joke.
That was cool.
You've been a mentee as well, Alexander.
Sure I have, yeah.
Tell us about that experience.
I've been fortunate enough to have a few mentors in my life, but the one that I always hold in reference is Dr. Helen Warren, who is now a retired
RN. And been on the show.
Been on the show.
Yeah.
And who was the senior lecturer for the addictions program. And so the reason that I hold her in such high esteem is when I transferred from being a counsellor and someone that worked in admin into the addiction space, at that time that wasn't allowed to. Because counselling and addictions were seen as two different fields. And I was looking at a graduate diploma, which you can only do if you've got a bachelor's. And my highest qual was a diploma, because back in my day, and I'm not that old, bachelor's didn't actually exist in counselling. It was a diploma, a diploma in social work, right? Those things didn't exist. They were money-making schemes later on. Anyway, Helen took on me anyway, and from there it just flourished, and I owe her a huge debt of gratitude, and even now in retirement I'll still touch base to see how she is and ask her questions. Because here's the thing, James, in mental health and addictions, while it's true that some things change, like certain medications or brands, the technique of being human-centered doesn't. That's why when I was talking about EQ, I would want to have someone much more in EQ than IQ, because I've seen what happens when you've got hugely intellectual people engaged in addictions and mental health compared to those who have got a bit more EQ or emotional intelligence, much more likely to make a connection. And yet when, certainly, you know, with his studies, it's about then how do you apply that emotional intelligence with current thinking and practices so you can do a bit of a wraparound approach.
Right, if you have both, you're a genius, aren't you? You're really set up to succeed.
I think so. I think so. And that's the whole point of why I offer, you know, working with mentees, is actually how do I get you, if assuming that you want to work with me, right, how do we get you from this area to this area so that you can have the best possible setup? Very quickly, James, you know, Suna talked about diversifying qualifications. In this current government and current environment with multiple job losses and people losing roles, now more than ever, having diversifications of work experience and qualifications is needed, so that if one role closes, you at least have the confidence to maybe go somewhere else. The other reason that I like working in the addictions and mental health sector is that there's not been a time over the 20 plus years that I've worked in the field where I've ever been made redundant.
Right.
Actually, what happens is in times like this, when depression and anxiety rises because of things like job loss, our roles become even more important. And then when things stabilise, then we're still needed.
Yes.
I mean, James, if I could be real with you, I don't think I've told you this. Ideally, all I wanted to do was a Masters of Museum of Antiquities and Fine Art.
Oh, really?
Yep, that's all I wanted. And to go behind the corner and repair, like, korowai Māori cloaks, you know, document our patus or our taihas, our Māori weapons, and kind of... That was never, now they look back, was never going to happen. But that was my initial kind of plan. Yeah. Do addictions for a little bit and then do something else. But, yeah, it didn't quite work out like that.
How much, I mean, getting down to brass tacks, you mentioned that there was a student loan component that you factor into the equation. Yes. What sort of money can you make as a clinician?
Yes, I'm not a practitioner. Yeah. So, shout out to Caleb. So, depends on the context. You could do a private practice. So, I don't, because remember, I do it for Aroha, but my colleagues could charge maybe $120, maybe $160 plus an hour to help people to become drug and alcohol free. If you're working in the sector, it tends to be anywhere between, say, $60,000 to $65,000. For new entrants, all the way up to maybe just over 100K, depending on the position and the region that you're in.
Yeah.
So it's an area that can pay well, and yet I would still say you still need a passion for it, because you can get paid as much as you want.
Yes.
But actually, if you're not enjoying the job, and especially when you're working with people with serious challenges, it's not going to be enough to get you through.
Yes, talking of being valued, I mean, you've got your psychiatrists at the top of the mental health ladder who are on $250,000.
Yeah, I think I saw something like 300,000 plus.
Yeah.
But also factor in they've also got huge debts that they often have to pay as well, if I...
Yes, they're still grossly overpaid. how can mentees best prepare themselves to maximise the mentorship experience?
There's two things that kind of come to mind. One is... like actually working with a client, there's a sense of commitment. So if you're going to do this, then we're going to need to give it everything we've got. Can I say to you, James, I have met people along the ways that have had ambitions of wanting to get, say, a degree in social work or wanting to earn more than what they're currently, so they might be on, say, 45, 47,000. They have a goal of getting to maybe 65,000.
Yeah.
And what normally happens is that two things. As they progress, they tend to go one of two ways. They either get excited and go for it, or sometimes they get a little bit nervous because things are shifting and changing.
Yes.
Sometimes people in their lives might try to pull them back. I can think of a few people that will remain nameless that, you know, and sometimes it's often partners. I often say in mentorship, if you're in a relationship, you really need to work with your partner, because sometimes partners can see their other spouse grow and feel left behind, so they'll try to pull them back, right? Yeah. So one is a commitment, and then secondly is about embracing the fact that success can actually be more scary than failure, because often people that I've worked with, and I'm not specifically talking about Sunny and Ira, but people that I've worked with in the past who have been mentees have really hit failure on multiple levels, and so that's their norm, that's what they're used to. But to actually succeed, to see them growing and thriving, that can be very, very scary. So helping them to prepare for the fact that when you are thriving, you are succeeding, you know, what can we do to celebrate it rather than run to the hills?
Sione, how do you prepare to maximise your mentor experience? Is there anything you do specifically that...
I think it's, for me, just realising who my mentor is, and like, in his wise age, has a lot of experience. And so he's seen many other things, and he's called events for what it is, and it turned out to be true.
Yeah.
And once it happened the first few times, and I was like, nah, I don't believe you. I think much later on, I learned from those lessons. So I guess learning lessons is probably the best way to maximise your experience with the mentor.
Irene?
So I would say, you know, it goes back to the basics. Listen. Put your ears on. Listen to what your mentor's saying. Sometimes you don't want to, but you got to.
Yeah.
If you're really wanting to get the real essence of the lesson out and, you know, maximise your mentorship, I would also say loyalty. You know, you want to be loyal to your mentor. You want to trust them. You want to make sure, you know, you go all the way so you can see the fruits of your labour. As Sione said, I was the same. It took me a few times. You know, didn't believe Alex at first, but then, wow.
What was it about? Was I wrong? What was it about what he said that you didn't believe?
I guess, well, you know, from our first show, we talked about depression and anxiety, and, you know, I have a lot of that. But it was him telling me, you know, just believe in yourself like I believe in you. And it's that little bit of aroha, that little bit of belief, you know, if someone else believes that I can do it and I can't see it, why not give it a go?
Yeah.
And then when you give it a go and it happens, then you start to believe him and then you trust him at every word he says. So, you know, it's that real, you know, he says it, you do it, and then it shows, you know, the fruits of the labor shows.
I think for me, sorry, just adding on, I think in my earlier, younger years meeting him, I was a bit naive. Because I think once I started progressing where I was, I started having like, a couple people hit me up, showing me things. And then he warned me. He said, I don't know if you should trust this. And I was like, it's all right. It's all right. I got this. I looked, there's a bloody pyramid scheme. And I was like, damn, I should have listened.
Ah, right.
So, yeah.
The old pyramid scheme.
Heed the warning.
Yes.
Listen.
Yeah, listen, guys.
But that comes with experience, right? And that's what I'm saying. How do we pass this on to give them the best chance?
How do you pass it on without being a parent?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or a teacher.
I would say...
Or a policeman.
Yes. Yeah, one of his greatest tactics is he'll let you make the mistake after warning you, of course. He'll warn you, but he'll let you make the mistake to learn from it, go back to him and be like, so did you learn?
What did you learn from this?
That is one of his greatest catchphrases. Yeah. What did you learn from this? What did this teach you?
Right, yeah. In what ways do you think mentorship can evolve in the digital age, especially with the rise of remote work?
I think, well, I've actually, again, this might surprise you, James, I've actually got two thoughts on the matter. I actually think that the more that we seem to be increasing in this digital age, I think we're actually creating more separation and isolation.
So.
One of the things I'm noticing working at my awesome job at AUT University is the ranks of anxiety and depression, mainly because of what happened in COVID, right, where they've got people that think that they can do these things online, but actually, you know, the ability to have face-to-face contact and social skills is just as important as what you're being taught in class.
Because there's energy in the room, there is, you know, you can see the other person.
Yeah, there's those divine sparks where you can get someone's riff without, you know, there's the thing about not freezing online with the most hideous face because you're frozen while everyone else is looking at you. Digital, I think, does work within menteeship. So one of the things that Sione and I are doing within the sexual abuse recovery space is looking at, which is why he's studying online teaching with me, is looking at actually how do we support people, like say for example, who've been affected by sexual abuse but are afraid to go face-to-face services first, assuming that you've got face-to-face services, because rural areas, for example, don't compare to our urban areas. So actually, there are opportunities to learn. So for me, it's a bit of a nuance at the moment. It comes to menteeship, same thing. You know, if you're in a rural area, how do you reach out to someone, but also have the ability to kind of catch up with them in the physical space as well? And in fact, the more that I kind of think, even with the introduction of AI, more people are relying kind of on AI to guide them. I think that has its, I think that's fraught with all kinds of challenges. Yes. You know, context is everything. And I think sometimes you need people that have had their skin in the game.
It's interesting
with a few scars.
It's interesting that you should talk about people being pushed apart. We've never lived in an age where we've lived so closely with each other and yet so far apart.
Yes.
And I don't quite know why that is.
I think two things. We, again, it's the Gemini in me. I know that people love instant gratification. So you can't often get that with another person, but you can get that, you know, through technology.
Yes.
That's why those ads, those 30-second ads are a thing of the past. They've now reduced them down to 6 seconds because attention spans aren't as big as what they are. Yet long formats like this, James, actually work for other people, right? So that's the first thing that I think of. The other thing, and I spoke about this some time ago, is, you know, if I get a bus or train and I see someone texting another person that's right next to them, asking them if they're all right, I just think, what's happened to our social skills and abilities where we're now using technology to reach out when they're in the same room, the same seat? There's a... And so when I kind of think with that mental health and addictions lens, I'm thinking, wowzers, there is stuff there that we haven't even been equipped to deal with. But I think that these two people, if that's what they want to do, will be.
They are, not to sound cliche, but they are our future.
Yes. But then within a Māori ideology, that's what it is. Only this generation and seven generations to come, because any good mentor should know their limitations.
Yes, it's not always true, though, is it?
What, knowing your limitations?
Knowing your limitations.
No, I haven't figured out mine yet, though, but we should, though, figure out.
You have no limitations. The sky's the limit for you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll talk about this next time, James, but I think one of the things I've had to reprioritise is my health.
Yeah.
You know, you can have all the passion in the world, but if your health isn't the greatest, it means absolutely nothing.
That's right. So what are the common misconceptions about mentorship that you've encountered?
That anybody can be a mentor, that's not true.
Okay.
I've seen people take on mentees and I think the expression is a dog's breakfast.
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't give my dog their breakfast, but they've done a terrible job of where people put faith in you or trust to help you get ahead. Then for me, it is a responsibility that I take seriously. Mm. I've seen other people... how can I word this? I've seen people take their mentees on journeys that have not only been hurtful, it's been self-destructive, and I think it's actually set them back. So, to be fair, like the word leader, anyone can call themselves a mentor or a leader, but to actually be able to demonstrate it, to be able to show clear actions or clear consequences... I'm not Christian by any sense of imagination, but there's a great verse around a good tree produces good fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I enjoy with my mentees is actually saying to them, you know, question what you see. You know,
especially these days, because so everything looks so authentic. You can be forgiven for being duped.
It's like Sione. I mean, you use the word dupe, so let's talk about Sione for a second. He talked about, with love, you know, these ways of getting financially ahead. Now, experience has taught me, and certainly working at the Retirement Commission, so shout out to Sorted, that getting rich quick does not work. Actually, it's a generational game. Most wealthy families have become rich over time.
Over time, yeah.
Right? But, and hearing Sione's fantastic plan of how to become a millionaire within 30 days, it's not quite like that, but within 30 days, just triggered off every alarm bell that I have, you know. But, and at the same time, you know, being able to say to Sione, well, if this is the path that you want to go down, even though I'm strongly advising that you don't, hey aha, or so be it, you know. And then, but then, and this is to his credit, anyone with the, and this is what I love about our Tongan whānau in particular, there's a sense of humility. So actually coming back and actually saying, whoops, you know, they were slightly Egyptian and this was a pyramid scheme. Oopsie, you know. And then a good mentor doesn't judge or criticise really, but it's like, what are three things that you've learned from this situation?
But actually, you know, going back to this parent-mentor type, there is a lot of apparent parenting in what you're saying. Because, you know, when you show leadership, you're also a role model. And talking about financial capability and making your own mistakes and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
You sound like the world's greatest parent.
Thanks. Well, I care about these people. I genuinely care about their well-being. You know, Master Airi talked about aroha, and it's true, you know, having a car, for example, I think is a necessity, especially in Auckland, where with love, trains and buses are non-reliable, right?
Right.
And so for Airi to get to his job, he needed a car.
Yeah.
And being able to support him and saying, listen, I know that this is the first time that you've got your own car.
Yes.
First time. And being able to say, hey, look, let's do this together. This is the vision. Yes, you have to save. No, you can't have this money right now because it's about, you know, the vision is the car.
Yeah.
You know, it does take a lot of aroha, but yet I also get it back when I see them grow, you know, whether it's Airi embracing his car and saying, I got it, looking at Sione passing that threshold with graduation, it's all worth the investment. And maybe that's the way I think about it.
Yeah.
It's an investment, but it's one that I can see dividends in.
So how many mentees have you had over the years? Many?
Yeah, not many. I'd say under 20.
That's plenty.
Yeah. Well, and
20 is plenty.
Is it? 20. Look at you with your rhymes. Well, I think for my... Yeah. I mean, in a sense, I kind of think that we meet people, well, in Wairoa or Spirit, we meet people all the time. Sometimes it might just be a brief catch-up and a hello. Sometimes it's a kind word. That's what Airi always talks about. But there are people, and kind of seeing them, watch them grow, and that's the fun bit. And then being able to step back, go, adios, or malo abito, if we're sticking with Tongan language, we, ka kite, and then watching them thrive.
Yes. All right, well, that brings us to the end of another program.
Thank you.
I could talk to all of you for hours and doubt will I have. that brings us to the end of the program for another week. We'll be back next week. Until then, keep talking. They tell me it's healthy.
Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.